Are you looking for a pro football podcast that doesn't put you to sleep with spreadsheets or insult you with mindless hot takes? Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL Podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to a new round of the Best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. Thanks for dropping by, as you always do. For those of you that may not know, SDHAM is the morning show that is attached to the Soccer Down Here Network, broadcast live on our X account at Soccer Down Here, at the Soccer Down Here YouTube channel, and also in and around the studio space. I host it from 9.05 a.m. Eastern Time until whenever, because we have been known to go added time, and we have been known to break the sound barrier and go 3 hours during the World Cup cycle. So that is what you get with all of our pundits, all of our newsmakers, and all the news to get your day started when it comes to the SDH Network and SDHAM. John Nelson here with you. This week, it's a chance to have opposition research with play-by-play voice of the Philadelphia Union, Dave Leno. Jahlil Anibamba joins us from Nashville to break down what he's going to see in his matchup with St. Louis City and Real Salt Lake. And then a very cool moment for us at SDHAM. A couple of national championships in spring and summer leagues are this weekend. We caught up with the Golden Gloves Award winner in the NPSL, Noe DeMoe from Bristol Rhythm AFC. We'll get that squared away with the upper plate coming up in just a little bit. But first, as we promised, it's a chance to get opposition research for Atlanta United and their fans to do it. Play-by-play voice of Philadelphia Union. Here's our conversation with Dave Leno and Oppo Research. How is your executive producer that you were trying to navigate to make sure that you could be here with us?
Good morning. My executive producer and boss, Logan, my beautiful daughter, who's 2 years old, is at a day camp nearby that she does not go to, but my wife and son do. So I made some arrangements, went to training yesterday with the Union, got Logan over to day camp for a little bit, and gives me a little bit of a morning here for at least maybe an hour and a half. And I'm right back into the prep mode and with the 2 year old, but happy to be with you.
As always, my friend, it's great to see you. We got you for 15. We got you for 15 solid before Michael Parkhurst comes in the quarter till. I got to ask you about life on the Richter scale, and it's probably both figuratively and literally with Ryan Richter, the new head coach. How are things different now? Because for anybody to sit there and say, oh, yeah, it's just Atlanta United and Philadelphia, you're different than it was earlier this year by a long stretch.
For sure. I'm not trembling as much as maybe I was the first half of the year, to your point there. It's taken me back to eighth grade science class with Mr. Flieger nearby where I'm living right now. But I'm first off, let me say, I'm so happy for Ryan getting this interim tag. It's kind of like a little sandlot moment for me. My first job with the Union in 2016, I was the voice of Bethlehem Steel, which is our second team now, Union 2. But at the time, they played in USL before Next Pro, and Ryan was the captain. So I was out on sponsorship things and going to, you know, kit launches and various other different events with him and Derek Jones. And, you know, that was towards the tail end of his career, a supplemental draft pick for the Union. And by the way, has worked his way all the way up from pre-Union Academy all the way through to a first-team assistant coach a couple years ago under Jim Curtin, Union 2 coach recently, the last 2 years. And now with this interim tag, and things are very, very different. The guys, I feel like, are playing with a little bit more freedom. I feel like, John, that the break came at a right time for the Union. And I think a lot of teams maybe could say that are towards the bottom of the table in both East and Western conferences. And I think it was a reset. There's definitely been some change. You know, sporting director John Shear got that job. A couple guys are out, like Owetu Mukanyu, had a great year last year next to Glesnes. An up and down season this year is really a center back one. He just transferred to Rangers. He didn't come back after the World Cup with South Africa. And, you know, we start now with six consecutive home games, including League's Cup. So we beat a good Red Bull team 3-1. We get our third clean sheet against Seattle last week, and we play a struggling Atlanta side. So we have momentum, but I think the focus for Ryan and company, and I hate to use a cliche, but it really is one game at a time for this group.
That's a dollar in the jar, by the way. We'll take a look at the jar at the end of the year. You've been reading my notes. I did want to talk about the back line because Macania didn't want to come back, and so he was transferred out. And then you bring in somebody that you're familiar with. It's not necessarily an even swap, but what's it like to have somebody back from Birmingham, not Birmingham, as we say here in the Southeast, but Birmingham? He comes back to a place, you know, get back to where you once belonged, Loretta. I mean, what's that like?
The tenor of the club has totally changed. And what's important with bringing back a Kai Wagner is a lot of the guys know him. And the new guys are already getting the feel and the vibe just being down there a little bit and talking to Kai off the side myself several times already since he's been back. It's like he's picking up right where he left. This is a guy, multi-time all-star, multi-time best 11 player. This is his home. And I think speaking with him, you know, a lot was reported in the press and conjecture, I think, by fans that it was solely, you know, family and his wife, but also it was a football or soccer decision as well. And Kai had a great time here. And he's very into the Philly sports scene, the pride, also, of course, his young kids being in the Philly and also South Jersey area. And on the field, I could speak to tactically what the Union sorely missed for those watching or listening that did not see any of us. We had a lack of service from the channels in half number one. We never really replaced a left back in a Kai Wagner quality. And I'm not trying to put down a Philip Ndinga or Nate Harriel who filled in at left back all the way from training, from preseason training and training camp out in Spain all the way to this point. But there was a slew of other players. We even played Finn Sundstrom, a 19-year-old who played in USL with North Carolina at that spot. So sorely missed the crosses. And then we weren't as lethal, John, on set pieces. And, you know, Ilofsky had to fill that void and some others. But Kai just has a whole dynamic, and also, you know, having a guy with the leadership. I think the Union went from, as you well know, really since the COVID 2020 season, where we've been objectively one of the best teams at home and also just record. I would say that we missed the veteran presence when you lose the four guys like a Wagner, a Glesnes, an Uwe back to Denmark, and a Ty Breba to DC. You're asking young kids to step up and thrust in a role that they're not maybe comfortable or accustomed to doing. And I think, and I don't fault Bradley Carnell or any of the staff or the other players saying, hey, to a Nate Harriel or somebody else, yeah, you are going to have to start calling out guys in training. You will have to step up maybe in that regard, maybe including maybe an Andre Blake too. That's very boisterous with his back line, but might not be this guy that's expected to call out people. The same with Ali Bedoya, who's taken on a different role. So you add the voice and presence alone of Kai in the locker room and also on the field like that. There's a different expectation, and I see it at training, John, behind the scenes about the intensity. And that's what Ryan, I heard that word a lot yesterday at training down in Chester. Keep up the intensity. And then, you know, tactically what I'm seeing, just a little bit different versus, like, I can go into particulars about, you know, ball rotation and man-for-man marking versus zonal marking. But the back line, John, to your question, I'll finish with this, was a problem. The Union were very anemic. We're still not fine-tuned with our finishing up top with the strikers. That's one point. The second point is, as bad as we were finishing, we were probably even more so lackluster defensively in front of Andre Blake, which really led to a disappointing first half of the year. And hopefully with Kai back and Nate Harriel playing center back and the emergence of Anil Pierre, Frankie Westfield's been a delight at right back. It's going to be a totally different second half for the team.
Voice of the Union, Dave Leno, joining us for Oppo Research here on a Freestyle Friday. Okay, since you mentioned it, I'll skip a line and I'll go to the offense from the back line. Yeah. Milan Ilofsky, who at times has proven himself to be a very bad man, and I mean that in the most optimistic sense possible. I mean, the guy can light it up. It seems like if you get him lighted, then that fuse can really carry you for quite some time. Ilofsky, Damiani, Indiana Vasilev, who freaks out every time he's on the show and he sees the Tormenta scarf over my right shoulder. You know, the offense that is there, it seems to, the engine kind of seems to be turning over a little better than it has in the past. Am I wrong?
It's fair to say. I think I would like to see, and this is just my play-by-play opinion, I would like to see us a little bit more dynamic in the transition game, and I think that's where we were really good last year in the Supporter Shield years. Like, how quick can we go, make a turnover quickly, go into space? And I remember a goal that we scored last year at Montreal that Vasilev right on cue scored in like the second minute. And we were down the length of the field in about 7-8 seconds. And that was like a Bradley Carnell or the Union DNA type of goal where we maybe don't like to have a lot of the ball. We dispossess the opposition and we go quick. I would like to see a little bit more verticality moving forward. The tear that Ilofsky's going on, this is a guy that switched his kit from 32 and assumed the number 10 jersey. He missed a penalty, which I think, I know early hindsight's easy to say, but he missed a penalty down at Mercedes-Benz. You remember the game back in mid-March down there in which we lost 3-1. If that goes in early on in the game, Damiani had a chance with a volley. Might have been a different outcome again, very early in the season, and now we're at a different point for both of our clubs. But Ilofsky scored 7 goals in the last 5. And what's different about him, what Ryan Richter, the interim manager, is doing. So Bradley can deploy him either as a second 10 in a 4-triple-2 or as a second 9 as a second striker. And I think Ryan prefers, and he said this publicly, as a second striker to a Bruno Damiani, or you can bring in Ezekiel Alado. And the thing that makes Ilofsky special is his quick release, and he can really make something out of nothing. Yes, if like you see in one of the goals that happened from Westfield where he curls the ball up ahead, it bounces once, one-time hit, beautiful finish from Ilofsky. He can do that. He can run into space off the back shoulder of a center back. But then quickly, like he did in against Red Bull New York, a ball floats into the box, spins at a 360 off a defender, shoots and scores behind Marshall Ruddy. He can do that too. And that's the key for him. Finishing, shots from a rapid rate, and I feel like center backs have to pay attention because he could run into space off of a center back. He can lurk out like to the tip of the 18, the penalty area, and take a shot from 20, 25 yards away. Or he can do some combination play, which is a tactic in the buildup of the Union where we were losing a lot of the second and third balls the first half of the year. I think fans would tell you, the media would say that we weren't stringing 3, 4, 5 passes together. That has changed in the last couple of games on this win streak. And again, it's only a small sample size, but I think a lot has to do with Ilofsky deployed up there. But I will tell you this, guys like Bruno Damiani only has 1 goal this year. He had 7 last year. He would tell you needs to finish in front of goal. Ezekiel Alado, club record transfer fee. The kid's only 20 for me, in over a decade in MLS. Now, I know there's still some acclimation period to a guy from Ghana, played in Sweden, coming to the United States for the first time, not knowing really anybody. There's still going to be time to be worked out. But Alado is this big presence where he can run into space like a Mikel Ua. But we're not seeing a lot of those direct balls over the top from the Union into space lately. Maybe we'll see a little bit more of that against Atlanta. We'll have to see on Saturday night. But he does provide that hold-up play like a Bruno. So while the strikers, lastly, aren't scoring and finishing at a rapid rate that we all would love to see, and they would too. It's the work against the ball that the requirement in our system, the defensive work from your nines and from your tens, that guys that you mentioned, like at Ilofsky, like Indiana Vasilev running all over the place, scores an open play against Red Bull, the emergence of Kevin Sullivan recently, starting a lot more for the Union right now, Quinn Sullivan, that guy Wagner. It's a totally different team, and I know people are saying, hey, Dave, you just brought Kai back and Quinn's coming off the ACL, but I can tell you the vibes are different on a 2-game win streak. It's our longest win streak of the year, and hopefully that will continue against a struggling Atlanta team.
I was going to ask, what kind of a matchup are you anticipating in this one? Another one of those Atlanta-Philly, knockdown, drag-out, Broad Street fight kind of things. What kind of the match are you expecting?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a battle of, an Atlanta team that comes in. I think, they want to go after the game and maybe replicate what Seattle did, was make it very ugly for the Union in the first 45 minutes. And there were very little frugal opportunities in front of goal. And I expect, Tata Martinez group to take a page out of Brian Schmetzer in the matchup. And what I mean by that is, you know, a mix of a high line of confrontation, what I've seen on tape from Atlanta. The question that I have for the Union, again, quickly, you know, if they get a turnover on Amiron Shaq-Almiron, how quickly can they play a ball into space to a Lukic or Danley, then forward to, you know, a spurting Kevin Sullivan to lead on an Alaski or a Damiani, whoever starts in the game. So that for me is key, because another factor that I've seen, and John, correct me if I'm wrong, but I've seen a ton of service from the width of teams recently, like a New England, like a Charlotte against Atlanta, where I feel like Atlanta is conceding space on the channels. And that's when you bring a guy like Kai Wagner, where he didn't put in a ton of crosses against Seattle, because I think that was part of their game plan to deny Kai getting forward up on the left. And I think a very good scout at that. And I expect Atlanta to do the same. Atlanta's right against our left-hand side. But I expect Kai and Frankie Westfield to get forward. And I think that is I think something that, just in my opinion, that Richter and staff can use at their disposal. Because a lot of times what I see is a lot of ball watching from Atlanta recently on this, what, winless and seven skid, is that, like, guys that are just easily running in the box, like a couple through balls and scoring. So I hope from the Atlanta perspective that they clean that up a little bit. Of course, you know, with my Union cap and polo on, you know, I look for our team to go on a three-game win streak into League's Cup. I think that will help us. But these runs in behind, I think, from the Union, I think that's key. My question for Atlanta is, how organized is that back line going to be against us? I have no qualms about the Miranchuk scoring 5 goals, Almiron finally getting on the board in back-to-back games. I know the new acquisitions that they brought in as well. Hopefully it can be a great toe-for-toe, you know, matchup where we're having a plethora of shots, maybe more of the shots on target for the Union in the matchup. But I expect a great game because, like you said, these Union Atlanta games, no matter where they are in the table, they're always thrilling and a joy for me to broadcast.
The back line for Atlanta, I would anticipate being some combination of left to right, Baez, Alonso, Mihai, and Tomas Jakob.
Yeah.
And so from that, I have no qualm. Cooper Sanchez is away with the U-20s. So that probably means it's Tristan and maybe Will Riley getting the start. I would anticipate in a 4-2-3-1 that you're probably looking at. I would say striker would be an interesting question. Is it Fafa Pico up top? Oh. Then you're looking at what's it going to be on the left. Then you would have, you know, Miguel and Alexi as a part of that. So I've got one question in the midfield with Fafa up top. What I would posit for Atlanta in the attack, since you mentioned your left with Wagner and, say, Wagner and Vasilev, I would posit in return the right-hand side with Alexi and whatever that rush is, and if you see Jakob coming forward, which he's not afraid to, that possibility of getting behind that back line. I'm looking at, say, Wagner and Miranchuk as being one of those good 1v1 matchups to keep an eye on Saturday night.
Yeah, I love that. And then the question that I have for us, and I think a lot of your U.S. soccer fans might keep a track on this guy, 18-year-old, 6'7", mm-hmm. Neil Pierre. Mm-hmm. You know, he was very good in Denmark playing with one of the clubs we have a partnership for, Lyngby. You know, how does he do coming off a secondary assist to Westfield, then leading on the goal for Ilaski? So I look for Pierre, who's we know how lethal he can be on set pieces, but also, despite his lanky frame, he's a very adept passer, comes in with a lot more confidence, learned how to, even more so at 18 years old, be more of a professional going overseas, playing in an environment you're not accustomed to, right? Even though he started with his U.S. youth team. So the partnership between him and now Nate Harriel, who's played all 4 spots on the back line, how do they derail and limit, especially in rest defense, like an Almiron, like a Miranchuk, like you're saying, or whoever else starts on top? I know Fafa, right, hasn't scored in maybe the last couple of months, but when I first came to the Union, Pico was on the team. He was a delight to cover. I used to call him the Gazelle affectionately. Loved to see him run into space, could finish well. So it'd be good to see Fafa back. I know Sergio Santos, I believe, is still on the roster as well. I think hasn't played in considerable time.
Yeah.
Things can change. You know, look, MLS, you know, 9 teams in each conference make the playoffs. Both of us are maybe not in prime positioning right now. The Union have a little bit more momentum into the game. They're at home. The crowd certainly sensing that, you know, Quinn's back, Kai's back, that, you know, I think it's going to be a nice environment down in Chester on Saturday night. But like you said, I think there's an Atlanta team that's hungry for points, and I know they're going to go after the game. I do not expect them. And I would be shocked if Tata says, hey, we're going to sit back, let the Union have the ball and break us down. I don't think that would be a good sign for Atlanta, even though the Union don't like to really play with a ton of possession. So looking forward to a great game. Always a pleasure to cover these two teams. And I'm excited to keep the momentum going. And then we'll see as it relates to the Leagues Cup for the Union, where we're home for another 3 games, what that does to our growth and momentum in the second half of the season.
Hit the promo for me before you go, sir.
Yeah, so the Union against Atlanta. I have our Union radio call in the Philly market. Anybody can hear it from anywhere on the 97.5 The Fanatic app at 7:30. Also, the home radio feed on Apple TV, choosing home radio. I'll be on the call with Union legend Sebastian Letou. But I always like to plug Mike and Jason, who do a terrific job with Atlanta's radio call. It'll be a delight to see them in Chester. They do a great job, as is your program as well, and keep up the amazing work. You and I always bounce from different sports, which we certainly love that versatility, and hoping for another great weekend of MLS.
Absolutely, my friend. Great to see you. Have a fantastic call. Have a great weekend, and we'll catch up with you soon, my friend. Great to see you.
Drink up, baby. Fantasy Football Happy Hour is here to get you wins and have some laughs. Matthew Berry here, and my podcast, Fantasy Football Happy Hour, has the sleepers, busts, and starts and advice you need to win your league. We're diving into the tape, we're crunching the numbers to bring you sleepers, busts, weekly starts and advice. Whether you're defending a title or desperately avoiding last place, I've got you covered every single weekday. The bar is open. It's Fantasy Football Happy Hour with Matthew Berry, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's always great to catch up with Dave and find out how his executive producers have been growing there in the Leno household. Obviously, very, very busy times with Dave on a bunch of different fronts. Glad he could carve out a little bit of time for us to talk about the matchup with Atlanta United this weekend. This is the Best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. Time for guest number two, and it is an individual who is very, very busy traditionally when it comes to time at Apple TV. The Kanji man, Steve Cangelosi, busy calling matches on Apple TV, also busy moving out of one house and into one in the city. We get those details as we catch up with the Kanji man, find out what he sees in FC Cincinnati and San Jose. And here is the conversation with the man himself, Steve Cangelosi. Kanji man, we have a hydration break brought to us by our friends at Local Vine Beer, Wine, and Liquor Stores. Two locations, Johns Creek and Cumberland, and we thank them for being partners and friends with us here at SDH. So how are you, my friend? You are not in the Cangelosi studios. You're in a place different.
No, we have pretty sketchy internet service in my office, and I've dealt with that for 9 years.
Wow.
We're in the middle of a move here, John. Have you ever sold a place and tried to buy a place at the same time?
The boss has. I have not.
It can be a lot. So many things don't function right now, okay? So I'm here. I hope you have me clearly and cleanly, and we're all good. It's always good to be with you, my friend. How are you doing?
Running around just as fast as you, trying to keep up with you. How is study hall getting ready for this weekend for you, sir?
So I am basically the voice of FC Cincinnati for about a 3-week stretch here. The fans there are going to be sick of me in Ohio in short order. I hope I'm kidding. I have about 4 of their games in a span of about 3 weeks. This is an intriguing one. This is a good one tomorrow night. Cincinnati, San Jose. It's the teacher versus the student in a way. Bruce Arena, some 30 years the senior of Pat Noonan, who hired Pat as an assistant for club and country, let's not forget. And two teams coming into this and both needing it for different reasons, I think. FC Cincinnati right now is the more fascinating study. You and I have watched this league and this game for a long time. I don't think I recall covering a team that is flirting with setting records for goals scored and goals allowed at the same time. But that's what Cincinnati is at this moment.
And the end of Hell is Real was certainly both real and hell, depending on who you were talking about. And Dotto Valenzuela and Mo Farsi, they went completely haywire, and it goes up the ramp, and the video came out from Columbus TV. Dotto, I think, got another game added to it. And so FCC's coming into this a little interesting, shall we say, with this matchup with San Jose.
And let's not mince words. Valenzuela did something stupid. Mm-hmm. And I think I spoke with Pat Noonan yesterday, and he said basically I left him alone for a couple of days. I just wanted to see how he would sort it out on his own. He feels pretty bad about it. Justifiably, he did get the extra game suspension, by the way. And it comes at a time when he's playing pretty well, John. All of the accolades for Cincinnati with this fantastic goal output that they've produced to this point have gone to Evander and Kevin Denke, as they should. I mean, goal scorers are the one who should get the headlines, but sort of an underlying factor in both of them hitting double-digit goals as quickly as they have is the improved play of Dotto, who's become a very important part of the engine that makes that midfield hum. He's a young guy. He's established himself on a very exciting team as a chance-creating number eight, and he's taken a very nice step forward at this point in his career. And I think as the week has gone on, what's been communicated to him is, look, you've stated what your goals are. You want to play in Europe someday. You think you have that in you. Maybe we think you have that in you. Teams are looking at you. This is not a good look, because they see at the end of the Columbus game a player who could not control his emotions, when that is part of the element of being a pro. So he's going to sit. He's going to miss this game. He's going to miss the game on August 15th. I'll clarify that he can and probably will play in League's Cup. They've got a game against Pachuca on Tuesday night. So he'll stay in the mix somewhat. But in the big picture here, this has to be a learning lesson for a good young player who's going to have a nice career ahead of him.
Yeah, we've seen him develop ever since his time MLS Next Pro with FC Cincinnati 2 at the beautiful Northern Kentucky University campus. So we've seen him evolve to where he is now. But you have this FC Cincinnati offense going up against San Jose's defense, which is borderline insane and toward the top of the table in fewest goals allowed in all of Major League Soccer. I think it's only 20 so far this season that San Jose has allowed. So it's an interesting contrast here about, okay, how's Cincinnati going to break down that defense that we've seen from San Jose?
It'll be an interesting tactical battle here. What I do think we'll see is a little bit of a shift here. With Dotto out, you know, can they just comfortably slide Pavel Buka back to central midfield here? He's going to be a factor offensively regardless of where he plays. He's had a nice run of 8 straight games at right wing back, and he's played well there. Do they give up something defensively on that side of the field? They probably do. But think about what San Jose is doing, and in particular, the defensive structure that they're employing here. At this time in the league's history, where in the past few weeks we see players like Lewandowski and Casemiro come into the league, here's Bruce Arena, age 74, saying, screw all that. I'm going to have 8 former college players line up last week in the Cali Classico, and they came within a missed penalty of winning it. So you talk about the construction of that back four. Reed Roberts is a hell of a player, right? Team of the match day. But it goes beyond that. And I think there are a lot of people out there who say the right things. I believe in the American player. Well, Bruce Arena, based on his roster decisions as a sporting director, his lineup decisions as a head coach, his actions probably speak louder than words. It's a tough game for Cincinnati because, A, San Jose is a very good road team. They're 6-1-1 away from Northern California. And, B, they get Preston Judd back this week. And what you don't want is a gifted goal scorer who was just snubbed by the people who comprise the all-star roster. And I would expect this team and that player in particular to kind of come out with guns blazing this week.
Well, and I'm somewhat, you know, the people's eyebrow on San Jose at times, because it's like, do we consider the game with Orlando City as an outlier and just a clunker, and you put it in file 13 and screw the tape and don't even look at it, or and focus more on what happened in Cali Classico? Or do you sit there and take that game with Orlando City, kind of put it off to the side as a reference material, maybe as an appendix B or C for your evidence going into this particular game? Where do you hold Orlando City in that 4-0 clunker?
I close the door on that game and I never think about it again. The frame of reference I'll use is this: the best regular season team I was ever around was 2015 New York, no, 2018 New York Red Bull. Okay. 2018. It was the last of their supporters' shield. And very late in that season, they just got blasted on a Friday night at home. It was Orlando, I believe, ironically, that came in and did it. It was 5-1. They parked it. It was fine. Everybody moved on. They went on to meet their demise in the Eastern Conference Final at the hands of Atlanta. My point being, I think everybody's going to have those chapters of a 34-game season where you're going to have to just sit there and say, what the heck was that? And I think there was a lot of that. There was a lot going on in that particular game, too. It was Griezmann's introduction, right, to MLS. And I would just say, leave it alone. This is a team, by the way, that's going to get stronger as we get a little bit into the deeper days of summer. Securus, from what I understand, is probably about 3 weeks away. That's going to be a big addition. And to me, that's one of the badges of honor of Preston Judd's season, because you could make a case he's been as valuable to this team as any player in the league, because what happened with him when Timo Werner went down and when Securus went down long term, his play didn't drop, his play elevated. And he probably played his best soccer in that stretch. So I think we're probably still a few weeks away from all pistons firing for this team. What stinks for San Jose is that we just came off this World Cup break, right? And these teams that are not part of the league's cup, like the Quakes, now have to go into hibernation for another 2 weeks. So there's a little bit too much stop and start this year, John, but you know, ultimately, I think talent wins out. I'd be surprised if by the end of the summer they didn't find a real gear again. Points-wise, they're still tied for first in the Western Conference with the Whitecaps and LAFC.
And for me, where Cincinnati is concerned, they are the box of chocolates at times. It's like, you know, they're going to come out here, they're going to score 6 or 7, theoretically. They're going to be gangbusters on offense, and they'll just boat race you, and you're going to sit there and go, all right, that was a horizon job. Or they're going to put up a clunker themselves. And that's why, you know, with me, FC Cincinnati, like I said, I don't know what version I'm going to get with them. And this is on a match-by-match basis right now with them.
I don't think there's an easy fix here either, John. And this is interesting here. You see, I had this conversation with somebody yesterday. I think we're entering that time in MLS where the smartest sporting directors are going to say, we have to do what it takes to win. And if that means getting the less sexy players with our designated player alignments, we're going to do that. My point being, I think we're going to see a wave of more teams filling DP slots in this league with center backs. Okay. Now, FC Cincinnati's three designated players right now are Evander, Kevin Denke, and Miles Robinson, who, truth be told, his play has left a lot to be desired. All right. It was enough there for Pochettino to put him on a World Cup roster and to start him against Turkey. But there was never that feeling where he was going to be the first reliable option off the bench for the United States either. And with FC Cincinnati this year, is he part of the problem? No, but is he part of the solution? I'm not sure about that. Yeah. So my point being, he's had his contract redone where his 2026 marked the first year of the designated player status. And you can't add at that position again. Even if you try to get even let's say there's a fourth designated player spot that comes into the roster rules in short order. Mm-hmm. You're going to have two center backs occupying two of those. There's a lot here for Chris Albright and Pat Noonan to talk about. This is the group that I think they're going to sink or swim with. Okay. But when we're sitting here with half a season done and we're actually wrestling with the idea of Samuel Guidi, a natural midfielder, maybe being the most reliable defensive center back that they have, well, that raises a whole bag of issues, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. I would posit that probably the best coach or that got the most out of Miles was Frank De Boer.
Well, yeah.
And that's how far back in the timeline we're going here with Miles.
Yeah, yeah. Miles was not a key contributor to that Atlanta 2018 championship team. He didn't play a lot. Obviously, as the years went on, he settled into something a little more special. Look, I think Pat Noonan's a good coach. All right, let's just take a step back here, okay? I think that him coming into the equation and winning all of those one-goal games the last 4 years, that's not a fluke. That's a guy who knows how to manage the game, okay? And to see them slip away from that, it's a little bit eye-popping this year. Whatever's there in Miles Robinson, I think Pat will get out. But I'm questioning now, as he approaches the wrong side of 30, have we already seen the best of what this guy has to offer? I think it's a fair question at this point.
All right, so how much time do you have left on the house before you close where you are right now in Cangellosi Estates?
Let's put it this way. Do you need any furniture?
Look at this office, man. I'm stacked.
Yeah, so my wife and I are moving back to Fun City. We're moving back to New York City, literally, in Manhattan. You know, we've lived here in the suburbs for a nice stretch of about 10 years. We're going to say goodbye to the green grass and we're going to go to the concrete jungle. We've had this in mind for some time and kind of looking forward to it. We kind of like the chaos of the inner city. It's kind of how we're wired. So we're supposed to be out of here in 3 weeks. Who knows?
Wow. And yeah. So is Cangellosi 2, is that ready to move in, or is this still part of this crossover that we're talking here?
So when I said chaos, I wasn't kidding. So I think we're going to be moving into the lovely Residence Inn for at least a couple of days, if not a couple of weeks. And wow. Don't ever do this, by the way. Just stay where you are. Really. Yeah.
Domnus omnis, my friend. As always, it's great to see you. It's fantastic to see you. May the transition from Cangellosi A to Cangellosi B be as flawless as possible. Keep us posted on this, and we definitely need to see the new Cangellosi Estates when you move in. We need to have the ribbon cutting and everything on the air.
Fewer windows, but we're going to do what we can to make it aesthetically pleasing. Yes.
Fantastic. Have a safe call, my friend. We'll see you soon.
See you soon, pal.
Understanding power requires more than headlines. I'm Peter Hamby, host of The Powers That Be, a podcast from Puck examining politics, economics, and media to provide context, analysis, and clarity without sensationalism. We ask how power operates, who benefits, and what's at stake. If you want to move beyond breaking news to deeper understanding, join us on The Powers That Be. New episodes every weekday. Follow The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Always great to find out what's going on in the mind of our top two guests, whether it be Dave Leno in Philly or Steve Cangelosi, who is moving from Cangelosi Estates in the suburbs to Cangelosi Tower. Hopefully we'll get updates on that, and may the move be as smooth as possible. You're listening to the best of SDHAM, the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. Thanks for hanging out with us here, however you've accessed us. 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com, or the Odyssey app. Also on the board is one of the lower division championships that is up for grabs this weekend. USL League 2 is up for grabs. Also, the NPSL, the Spring and Summer League, is also up for grabs with their championship game. Constant troublemakers, El Fadalito, works their way from the left coast to the right coast, traveling to Bristol. The red carpet treatment is real. I have seen it. It looks amazing. And so for that club to get to come over and be a part of things when it comes to the infrastructure that's going on in the soccer world when it comes to the southeastern United States in a championship game. Bristol Rhythm AFC keeper Noe DeMoe, Golden Gloves winner for 2026. He gets to break it all down for us, what the season has been like, basically 2 months hanging out with friends who become friends for a lifetime with you here playing the beautiful game in Bristol. El Fadalito on their way in, waiting is Bristol Rhythm. And so here's a chance to catch up fresh off the practice field, baseball. Noe DeMoe, you're a Golden Glove winner, and he joined us to discuss Bristol Rhythm AFC and the championship game in the NPSL. We go to Tennessee and catch up with the man who is, in fact, Gloves. Do you have the Golden Gloves, Noe?
No, not yet. Not yet.
They need to give them to you.
Can you hear me?
Raining gold. Yeah, you're good. I'm a little slow because my Wi-Fi is down and it's kind of spotty. So you're chasing after a championship that you would be in the last game of the NPSL.
Honestly, it's unreal for me. Like, especially on the summer league team, you know, the boys for like just 2 months. So I met everyone on the team 2 months ago, and we became such great like friends.
And he starts telling this, and of course he freezes up. This is beautiful.
And I know.
Let me put. There he is. All right. And that's. Do not move from that spot. You're in good shape.
Good
shape. Don't move from that spot at all. Yeah. Perfect. Don't move. But you just met the guys 2 months ago, huh?
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what unbelievable about it. Like we became such a strong team in a short amount of time. So it's unreal.
When you look at your pathway, Tusculum, actually technically France, Tusculum, to East Tennessee State, what was it like to go from France to Tusculum? I don't anticipate that was something that, you know, to do sheet right off the top. It's like France, just not something that a lot of folks have as a part of their work. How did you get from France to Tusculum?
When? So I moved in the U.S. 2 years ago. Why there?
Yeah.
I had an agency back in France, and so that they send those players from the sports, the semi-pro clubs or like amateur clubs into the U.S. And so I joined this agency and I had a couple offers pretty much everywhere in the U.S., but so I had a phone call with this coach back then, and then I really enjoyed talking with him. I really liked the project. He was bringing a couple other French players. So he helped me, obviously, came with other French people to get used to the U.S. at first. And we didn't have the best year as a group, but it was a very great first experience that led me now to ETSU, a pretty good D1. So I'm very happy I signed there first.
I was going to ask how much culture shock it was for you to go from to East Tennessee.
Yeah, obviously, there's a lot of difference. Every time someone asking me the question, I replay the food. The food is very different, obviously, from back home. But we kind of get used to it. The first couple of weeks and months, it's pretty hard to get used to.
Yeah, are you at a park?
I just finished practice with Bristol Rhythm AFC, and I'm in the dugout of the baseball team.
That's great. That is fantastic. What have you learned about yourself experience coming here to the United States?
So what I learned from this experience of the U.S., so I would say, like, I have confidence in myself because back in France, is the soccer is an elite world. You know, it's a lot of pressure. It's very, very hard to succeed, to be a professional, etc. So I put myself in such, like, a high pressure, like, moments when I had to train and perform on the weekends. I came here. I was willing to just turn a new page, a fresh page, and just start from zero and just enjoy before the soccer. Like, no pressure. I played this sport at the age of 7 to enjoy it at first. And that's what, when I grew up in France around like 15, 16, I kind of lost this will of enjoying the sport and just to perform. And so I came here, and I came here to enjoy it. And that's how you perform even better, I would say.
Are you enjoying it?
Yes, I'm enjoying, obviously, this summer even more. Joining this team of Bristol Rhythm AFC, being on a undefeated season is obviously enjoyable. I have such, like, great friends. Like, the owners are amazing. The fans are unbelievable. We had, like, pretty much 900 fans on the semifinal last week, which is a crazy, crazy amount of fans for NPSL games. So I'm enjoying the soccer right now.
How much have you seen on El Farolito?
So I watched personally a couple of that game. They look like a pretty dangerous team, way more older than us. I think they have a couple of players around 28, 29. We have a pretty young roster, but I'm not scared. I'm pretty confident. We are not undefeated for no reason. So it's going to be a tough game, obviously. It's a championship, but I think we have all the keys to win the game.
My last question for you. What is your favorite piece of Southern cooking?
I mean, to be honest, I don't really know about the Southern cooking. I'm more like a fast food guy, or I like Texas Roadhouse, maybe. I don't know.
we need to get you some good some good gravy steak or something. We need to get you some good Southern cooking, especially a big breakfast. That's what we've got to do, man. So we've absolutely got to do. We've got to get him the nice white gravy. We got to get you the nice white gravy breakfast stuff, like the good potatoes, the big chicken, and before you get out of there.
Okay, I need
time
to try.
At ETSU.
Yeah, okay. After the final, someone has to take me somewhere.
Yeah, this weekend. Thanks for dropping.
Thank you so much.
Bye. And now that you're...
thank you, sir.
We'll see you soon.
Thank you so much for having me here.
Noe DeMoe, and he is Golden Gloves winner. Very cool that he joined us after practice. And very, very cool. And thanks to Gary Moody and everybody at the NPSL for that. We're efforting... and we hopefully will catch them as we get closer closer to anything and everything on the flip side. So very, very cool to keep an eye on. That is one team in the NPSL. Once again, remember, with the NPSL, that championship game is Saturday night. And so if you're going, just make sure that you're there in good time to make sure that you hit all the barriers
You've hit all of the places that you need to get to, make sure that you can get in the door and have a great experience when it comes to the NPSL and their title game. El Fidelito traveling from San Francisco Bay Area all the way to Bristol to take on Bristol Rhythm AFC and their Golden Gloves recipient for 2026, Noe DeMo. That is the best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. Once again, John Nelson here with you. Thanks to Noe DeMo from Bristol Rhythm. Thanks to Steve Cangelosi from Apple TV. And thanks to Dave Leno from Philadelphia Union for breaking it all down for us in their respective places all weekend long. So, once again, start time in Bristol, location in Bristol. If you're going, you've got to make sure that you get there in one piece, because I would anticipate that there's going to be a lot of folks that will be wanting to make their way into that particular venue to see what is going on in the last game of the year. So 7 o'clock Eastern time, El Fidelito from San Francisco, Gene Malcolm Stadium, Bristol, Virginia. Gates open at 5:30, kickoff at 7. Bristol Rhythm, 9-0-1 Southeast Conference champ. El Fidelito, 8-0-2. Got the Golden Gate Conference Championship and the USASA National Amateur Cup. Tickets are 12 for adults, 8 for children, 7 to 17, 6 and under free. Tickets purchased at the Gator Online. Game's also going to be broadcast on NPSL.com. But it was great to catch up with Noe DeMo as his season comes to a close with a bunch of new friends on his roster. That is another go-round of the best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. Thanks for dropping by, as you always do. And since it is the end of the show, that means we do this. Play it safe, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.